WJBK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. This hour, President Biden is going to address the nation on the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. He's also expected to make a pitch for giving billions of dollars in aid to Israel and Ukraine. CBS's Weijia Zhang.
Sources close to the funding request have told me that about $60 billion would go toward Ukraine funding, at least $10 billion to Israel, which is the number that the country requested. And then the other remaining $30 billion would be spread across other priorities you see here, including border security and Indo-Pacific countries.
A U.S. Navy destroyer intercepts some missiles and drones in the Red Sea.
General Patrick Ryder explains what happened.
The crew of the guided missile destroyer USS Kearney, operating in the northern Red Sea earlier today, shot down three land attack cruise missiles and several drones that were launched by Houthi forces in Yemen.
As for where they were headed?
They were launched from Yemen, heading north along the Red Sea, potentially towards targets in Israel.
A U.S. carrier strike group was moved to the region with another one on the way after the October 7th Hamas attack against Israel. The move is meant to deter further escalation of the war. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Israeli airstrikes on Gaza continue, including in areas in the south that Israel had declared as safe zones. CBS's Roxana Saberi in Tel Aviv.
Well, in Khan Yunis in the south, the Hamas-led interior ministry says strikes hit several homes. A local hospital says they've received at least 12 dead and 40 wounded, several of them children from northern Gaza who had been playing soccer in a lot.
With heightened tensions due to the Israel-Hamas war, the U.S. State Department warns Americans worldwide to be extra vigilant. CBS's Nicole Skanga.
Both al-Qaeda affiliates and Hezbollah have called on supporters to target the U.S. and Israeli interests. So law enforcement here making it very clear that they would like state and local partners to remain vigilant, as well as the general public.
Even after losing two rounds of House Speaker votes, Republican Congressman Jim Jordan says,
I'm still running for Speaker, and I plan to go to the floor and get the votes and win this race.
A third vote is scheduled for tomorrow morning. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov meets with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Former Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor says North Korea cannot help Russia much in the war against Ukraine.
They certainly have weapons. They certainly have ammunition for artillery. But this demonstrates the problem for Russia. They've got two countries in the world willing to sell them weapons.
The other country is Iran. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. The Jefferson County District Attorney will ultimately review the report from state investigators in regards to a fatal police shooting yesterday in Watertown. Officers were called about property damage. A male suspect took off, was found in a parking lot, then pointed a gun at police. That resulted in an officer firing a few shots. No one else was harmed during the incident, and the involved officers have been placed on administrative leave. A legislator from Milwaukee, State Senator Tim Carpenter, has suggested the introduction of a $2 or $3 ticket tax for Milwaukee Brewers games at the ballpark. The tax is intended to fund renovations and ongoing maintenance at the stadium. Carpenter anticipates that a $3 per ticket tax could yield more than $7 million. Republican lawmakers at the Capitol are considering the taxation of non-Brewer events at the stadium. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
A great football matchup brewing as Carroll University welcomes Wheaton College to Schneider Stadium this Saturday, October 21st. The Pioneers, 4-1. Thunder, 5-1, ranked 13th in the country and second in the CCIW. You can catch all of the action live with Don, Johnny, and Triple G. Pregame at 12:30, kickoff at 1 p.m. It's the Pios and the Thunder this Saturday afternoon on the Shaw WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, and the Civic Media app.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Anything we can do without having to do any more work, any more policies, is probably a very good thing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. The president gave an Oval Office speech on Israel and Ukraine and American leadership. And I got to tell you, I'm going to steal Van Jones's. This is the day Joe Biden became presidential. No, this was an incredible speech. It really was. It's so much so that Britt Hume over at Fox News said, this is the best speech of his presidency. This is what he's going to be probably remembered for. And the faithful are losing their minds. Interesting watching the Twitter, it's interesting watching the blue checks lose their minds over the fact that Brit Hume said, look, this was an important speech. This is where the president laid out America's position and with force and clarity. This is good stuff. This is what American leadership should look like. And my mind kept going, what would this have looked like if Donald Trump were giving this speech? You know, what would he have wandered off into? Which side would he have taken? And this is the other part of this. Which side would he be on? Because remember, and this is really, frightening stuff. Said that the other side, they were smart. Putin was his buddy. So when President Biden says American leadership is what holds the world together, our alliances are what keep us safe, our values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. We put all that at risk when we walk away from Ukraine and turn our back on Israel. I completely agree. And this is that moment where you go, again, thank goodness Joe Biden is in the White House at this moment for his sanity, his calm, and the fact that this guy knows foreign policy. So to hear the speech, you talked about America being the arsenal of democracy, and I agree. It's about time we start giving Ukraine everything they need to protect themselves and to take on Russia. The same thing with Israel. If you're going to be supportive, you got to be supportive. But he also said, we must, without equivocation, denounce anti-Semitism. we must also, without equivocation, denounce Islamophobia. And look, you've been seeing that ramping up here. You had Trump talking about how, you know, we're going to go back and, you know, we're going to go get those Islamos or whatever. Whatever word he used. This is important language. This is important that he understands what's going on. This is a guy who's got his thumb on the pulse. Now, I go back to him talking about America being the arsenal of democracy. And as I've said, you know, we should be giving these places the things they need to fight the wars that are theirs, that we don't have to send troops to. Now, I was just having this conversation today with a friend, and I said, look, you know, nobody wants people dying. Nobody wants poor and working class people on either side of the divide to suffer. There is no solution that I can think of, you know, when you look at what's going on in the Middle East. It's a mess. It's been a mess my entire life. There's no silver bullet here. But you've got to support your allies. And what's interesting is I'm watching the responses to his speech, and, you know, just right up until airtime, you know, I'm looking at all of the different comments. I used to believe that Republicans, you know, again, you know, things stopped at the water's edge. Our division stopped at the water's edge. When it came to foreign policy, people would rally around. That, I got to tell you, frighteningly, not the case right now. Now, here's the thing. The president, in his speech, said, look, I'm sending a funding bill to Congress tomorrow. Got to get this done. Got to get what we need immediately. Sending it tomorrow. Now, look, here's the thing. Here's the problem. Patrick McHenry, the acting speaker, opened the House floor today and immediately recessed it. No work being done. I guess vacation again. I guess another no speaker vacation day. You know, it's the day to go out and do the podcast circuit, I guess. And the thing that's frustrating in all of this is the world is in chaos. And I go back to, the president and his leadership. Thank goodness someone with the sanity and clarity of Joe Biden in the Oval Office right now. Because I can't imagine where we would be with the other guy. What we would be conceding. Because again, you know, I had someone tell me, you know, Donald Trump would have made a deal by now. There would have been a deal made. The art of the deal. He's the art of the deal guy. And what would that deal have looked like? You know, what is he giving away of somebody else's? But again, we're in a moment where Congress is dysfunctional. You've got the speaker. It's only getting weirder. Ken Buck, evidently, and this is the part that I'm finding interesting. Ken Buck, the Republican congressman from Colorado, told Axios that his landlord for one of his congressional offices, evidently terminating his lease, kicking him to the curb. So here's what's functionally happening in Congress. The first act of the temporary speaker was to throw Nancy Pelosi, who was at a funeral for Dianne Feinstein, throw her out of her office and throw Steny Hoyer out of his office. And now you've got a landlord because, well, the speaker, you know, debacle is going on. He's getting thrown out of his office or out of his offices back in his district. This, I'm waiting for Ken Buck to come out with a tenants' bill of rights. Because, again, that's where we're going. Now, understand, Jim Jordan lost the first round and then lost the second round and actually lost an additional vote. And now they're saying, look, he's going backwards because, according to one lawmaker, he could lose as many as 40 Republicans if they vote again, which is why they recessed. And you got Patrick McHenry, who has threatened to quit. So it only gets worse. And what I find interesting is, again, they're pointing at the Democrats for not bailing the Republicans out. you know, it's the Democrats' fault for not, you know, for not coming to the defense of the Republicans. No, no. Get your you-know-what together. This isn't hard. This should not be this difficult. You have control. And like, as I've said a number of times, I believe this is the Republican Party saying we can't govern. We don't have any ideas. We don't know how to do this. We do the other thing so much better. We cause chaos and anger, and we fear and smear better than anyone. But, you know, actually doing the work, that's hard. That's actually, you know, work. It's something that they kind of have an aversion to. But here's the thing, and this is where this gets deadly serious. The president is sending a bill for funding for Ukraine and for Israel tomorrow to Congress. How are they going to maneuver that legislation through? How are they going to get the resources that the globe needs right now? You know, it's all fun and games watching the clown car of crazies, you know, do circles and run over each other's feet. But this is deadly serious. And this is why, again, we should not, and I'm hoping come next November, I'm hoping that voters go to the polls and remember this chaos. Remember how ineffective they are. Remember how they cannot govern. And then we throw the bums to the curb, especially the crazy ones. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, Congress taking a snow day. I don't know what else to call it at this point. You know, mental health day? Look, I know they were ordering pallets of pizza to try and make it through the night because they were going to pull an all-nighter. Basically, what I think should happen, they should lock them all in a room and nobody gets out until they figure this out. Or we stop paying them. There's an idea. Not that they need the money, to be honest. Let's quick go to the phones. We've got Steve in Chicago on one. Steve, how are you?
Oh, fine, all things considered. This idea that what's going on in the nation's capital within the Republican Party is somehow the fault of Democrats just boggles the mind. I mean, this is like saying, you know, Himmler and Hitler are at each other's throats and Churchill is to blame.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it is not the responsibility of Democrats to rescue the Republicans. Now, having said that, I think an interesting compromise. I doubt it could ever happen, but I would honestly, as Democrat, go to a group of, shall we say, reasonable Republicans and say, you know what, take your pick of committee chairmanships, and we will give them to you. You will be the head of X, Y, and Z committee. Now, the Speaker of the House will be Hakeem Jeffries. But the fact of the matter is, you guys will have your own. You guys will be running your own committees. All we ask for you is that you cast your vote for the Democrat. And I would like to think that that would work, but I suspect that there aren't enough of them who'd be willing to do something that gutsy, because it would, in fact, imperil them moving forward. There was a time when a reasonable Democrat or Republican such as that could count on that sort of thing as an asset going forward in terms of reelection. But today, we've become so balkanized in terms of our politics that you cannot agree to do anything with the other party, yeah, especially if you're a Republican working with a Democrat. You know, this is not what the founding fathers, with all of their flaws, they were bright enough to recognize that government works, especially in the context of our government, our constitutional republic, as a function of compromise. You don't get everything you want. You get some things. You don't get other things, and that's how it's supposed to work, because you represent a diverse group of people, because that's what America has always been, diverse group of people with a diverse set of interests. I don't know where we go, like you said. I mean, the problem with all of this clown show in which the Republicans have set their hair on fire is that, you know, if it were any other time, but, I mean, think about what was on the news today. I mean, we have a possible expansion of what's going on in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now we have Yemen involved. And you've got, today, the United States was involved in a combat action in that region. You've still got the war in Ukraine. You've got, of course, Sidney Powell. You, I don't know if you've addressed that, but you made this evening. I mean, she pled guilty. You know, Donald Trump is still on trial. We're still going into an election cycle. And, of course, we don't have a speaker in the House. And to top it all off, we're getting inching closer and closer to that, you know, middle of November deadline when this country runs out of money, technically. So, yeah, this is not the time and place to sort of be making jokes about this stuff. I know I'm tempted to do it, but because of the Republicans, you know, they got what they deserved. They created a Frankenstein monster, and now it wants to kill them. But, again, I don't know what the answer is, except to say that, you know, I'm hoping that they'll pay for this in the upcoming election cycle, that Americans will see that these are not people with a vision to govern. And just so people understand, there are the old-style Republicans, some people call them the neocons, whatnot, the Reagan Republicans. These are people who talked a good game of propaganda with regard to, you know, government is the problem. But make no mistake, they love government on all sorts of fronts. They loved it in terms of funding military projects, especially in their districts. They loved it in terms of the government building infrastructure from which profits could be derived in the private sector. They loved the fact that a well-educated populace was made possible through our educational system. They loved a lot of things that they claimed that government was terrible at. But they understood that it had to exist. But, again, they wanted to talk up a good game for their sort of hardcore constituents. People like Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert and a few others, these people actually want to shut down government. They don't see any problem because they know so little about how government functions as part of the tapestry of this society and the international community, I might add. And so for them, it's, oh, no, yeah, we can shut down government. Things can work just fine without government in a modern, complex society such as the United States, something that, you know, a freshman political science student wouldn't argue. But these are adults serving in the House of Representatives. And this is what they honestly believe. So, I don't have the answer other than to say, you know, there has to be something on the far side of this next week, perhaps going into January, where McHenry becomes sort of this long-term interim speaker, and we empower him to do some things, including help to pass a budget. But, and again, as you say, funding for the conflict in terms of Ukraine, funding in terms of what's going on in Israel, a number of things. But do we get an actual speaker anytime soon? I can't see it happening. And it's certainly not going to be Jim Jordan. And by the way, this is a man who weaponized the conservative media pretty much through the equivalent of throwing a carton of grenades down in front of a group of crazy people and saying, I don't know what you're going to do with these grenades, but hey, these are the people who are your enemies.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. They went out and they threatened their own people. They threatened their families. I mean, this is not the way to garner support.
I'm right there with you. No, you're spot on. Appreciate the call, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to, I got Alice online too. Alice, how are you? What's on your mind?
I'm insane. What I wanted to say was, you know, it's pretty bad when all of a sudden the commentators that are Republicans, such as that Megan McArdle that writes for the Washington Post, she had an article today about the situation with, you know, the Republicans and no speakers. But as usual, even though she was saying that, you know, basically the Republicans needed to get their act together, she said, ends it up, the last paragraph of the article, and this is a quote from the article, she says, this is the dynamic that saw Representative Matt Gaetz and seven other Republicans banding with Democrats to depose the Republican House Speaker. And I thought, and as usual, they have to drag and the Democrats into it as if it was the Democrats that started it and not the Republicans.
The Democrats voted for their candidate. Put up a decent candidate and they may vote for him. They haven't put up anyone who's palatable. I mean, if you want, this is how this works in this country. If you want my vote, you have to be somewhat reasonable and somewhat worth voting for. They haven't put up anyone worth voting for. Choose someone else and we'll talk about it. But Jim Jordan was a non-starter. Scalise, a non-starter. Maybe Brian Fitzpatrick gets a couple of Democrats to come around. I don't know, but he's not even being considered.
Exactly. But I thought to myself in the comment section of the article, everybody was kept saying, hey, this is your Republican Party that did this. It's not the Democrats' place to solve your problem. I mean, you know, I mean, people were just commenting left and right saying this. But I thought, and how usual is it? Y'all come in, make a mess, and then blame the Democratic Party for your own stupidity.
Yep.
But it's crazy. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I mean, look, you know, the Democrat put somebody up the Democrats are willing to vote for, and they may vote for him. That's how this works. You don't put up crazy people and go, bail us out. We've got the gasoline. Give us the match. That's not how this works. Not how it works. But here's the thing. This is the weird thing. There are some things that need to be done. We have work to be done. For instance, there is a piece of legislation, evidently, that is just popping out. New legislation from Brian Shantz, a Democrat of Hawaii, and Tan Young, a Republican from Indiana. Both senators. Who have said, hey, you know, we just discovered that child labor isn't a thing of the past. Child labor exploitation isn't from 100 years ago. It's going on right now. In fact, according to the Department of Labor, child labor violations up 69%. What I think it is finally we're looking for it. I think finally you've got an administration that's going, hey, maybe we should stop that. Hey, maybe we should do something. Now, what I found interesting was Senator Shantz from Hawaii. This is mind blowing to me. He had just learned that the fines were minuscule. Just learned. So then, once he learned this, motivated to act. I've been talking about that for all 18 years of doing this. In fact, most labor law violations, the penalties are pathetic. In fact, they're so pathetic that it's an enticement to break the law because the penalties don't cost you more than the payoff. In this case, the crime, it actually pays off. Crime does pay here. So now you've got, you know, these two senators, a Republican and a Democrat, bipartisan, moving forward on legislation. This may pass the Senate. May happen. It was introduced on Wednesday. We're going to see what happens. Creates actual criminal penalties, which I think, we need. And allows victims to file civil lawsuits. Huge. Again, not just the slap on the wrist from the Labor Department. You know, post a notice and say you won't do it again until next time. This is stuff that we need. And again, they've needed for a very long time. But, you know, they introduced this criminal penalty for people who repeatedly hire kids. A fine up to $50,000 in a year in jail. I would say If you're doing it repeatedly, this is where I'm in favor of the death penalty. I'm not generally a death penalty person, but this is where we should institute a corporate death penalty. I'm not saying kill the CEO. Throwing them in jail is enough. Trust me, I'm not advocating for killing the CEOs. But killing the company, taking their charter, ending them, bankrupting them, that I could get behind that wholeheartedly. That would be a a welcome change. We might actually then start, protecting kids again. Huh. Even poor kids. Think about that. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Think this would ever get to the House? How many Republicans would vote against this? That's the reason I want them to get a speaker, to see if they even bring this to the floor. There's something. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1823. That was the day abolitionist and women's suffragist Mary Ann Shad Carey was born. Her parents were free blacks of color in the slave state of Delaware. They were involved with many prominent abolitionists and active in the Underground Railroad. The family moved to Pennsylvania, where Mary and her siblings were educated in Quaker schools. As a young woman, Mary became a teacher and returned to Wilmington, Delaware, where she opened a school for black children. Once the Fugitive Slave Law was passed in 1850, Mary and many other free blacks fled to Canada to safely continue their abolitionist work. She opened a school for fugitive slaves in Windsor, Ontario, just across the river from Detroit. Mary soon came under fire in the local press for insisting the school be racially integrated. She responded by starting her own newspaper, the Provincial Freeman. She and her husband Thomas often traveled to the United States to continue their anti-slavery work. They were present at John Brown's 1858 Constitutional Convention. Mary worked with Osborne Perry Anderson to publish his 1861 memoir, A Voice from Harper's Ferry. Anderson had participated in Brown's raid and was the lone African-American survivor. After her husband's death, Mary returned to the United States with her children to help recruit black soldiers for the Union Army. Once the Civil War was over, Mary moved to Washington, D.C. to teach. She enrolled in Howard University, where she earned a law degree. There, she joined the National Women's Suffrage Association and worked with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. She continued to advocate for civil rights and women's equality until her death in 1893.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Seemingly intractable problems sometimes have an obvious solution standing right in front of them. Our nation's dire shortage of long-haul truck drivers, for example. Wrangling big rigs across the country is difficult and dangerous work, and the corporate giants that dominate the industry have long been wailing that they can't find people willing to do the job. Their lobbyists have even pleaded with regulators to lower the age requirements so they can hire teenagers to drive these 18-wheel behemoths. What could go wrong with that? Is there no better solution than child labor? How about us, asked the nonprofit group Real Women in Trucking. Little known fact. Less than 5% of America's long-haul drivers are women. Lesser known fact, thousands of women are eager to do the job, are fully qualified, and hold commercial licenses to drive the rigs, but are constantly rejected when they apply for openings. This is because most of the industry impose a discriminatory gotcha to reject qualified female applicants. The gimmick is an unwritten, unlawful corporate rule mandating that female job candidates can only be trained by female driving instructors. Obviously, since there are so few women drivers, very few female trainers are available, so, gotcha, women can't get hired. This is toothachingly stupid. Major corporations are loudly crying labor shortage while the answer to the shortage is literally knocking on their doors. Also, these are good-paying jobs, one of the few available to people without college degrees. So trucking corporations are literally slamming the door to the middle class in the face of enterprising women. This is Jim Hightower saying to the industry, hey, stop crying, answer the knock, and hire the women. To learn more about this story, Go to realwomenintrucking.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some interesting news today coming out of Michigan. Remember, though, that whole fake elector thing? Remember those people who signed up and said, no, we're the real electors. Here, we signed our name and we did all this stuff. Well, evidently, one of the fraudulent electors, a guy named James Renner, he has pled guilty. And here's the other part. The rats are jumping ship. He is going to cooperate with Dana Nessel, the Michigan Attorney General. So the 8 felony charges he had against him are going to be dropped in exchange for his cooperation. Now, here's the thing. He's not the only one. Turns out prosecutors in Georgia have bigger krakens to fry. And Sidney Powell got probation. Racketeering charges, whole bunch of other stuff, down to probation and a $6,000 fine. Oh, I wonder what she's already said. And here to share some thoughts on what that could possibly be and why the rats are jumping ship, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. If you want to check out her work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
I am great. So what do you think they gave up? How loud did the birdies sing?
Well, I'm going to guess in Michigan, he probably must have had a lot to sing about because, I mean, every single charge was dismissed. This isn't, you know, in the case of Sidney Powell, they've just sort of pled down to misdemeanors, and she's got probation, but it's 6 years of probation. And it's kind of a little bit like the agreement that they did with Alan Weisselberg, where it's like, if you screw up, you're going to prison.
Yep.
And so I feel like her thing is like, she's basically got to try and figure out how to please every prosecutor. Whereas the guy in Michigan kind of can just sort of turn over stuff, right?
No, and that was the part of this that I found, you know, I was reading through it. She's going to pay restitution because this all comes out of that Coffee County, debacle. But she's going to pay restitution of a couple $1,000s. But the other part with it is testify truthfully. And, yes. You know, it, like any plea deal, she also has to go through an allocution process where she admits what she did. So this should be entertaining to go, okay, Kraken, what'd you do? And who told you to do it? Why'd you do it? How'd you do it? This is gold.
The Kraken be Kraken. And I think the biggest thing here is obviously, you know, Special Counsel Jack Smith has got to be watching it with glee because it's like he didn't have to do anything here. And in Powell's case, basically she agreed to the state plea. There's no plea at the federal level. So everything that she says will be able to be used against her in federal court. So, I mean, she's got to figure out how to make a plea deal with the feds. Otherwise, she's about to get charged federally, too.
Yeah, there's no I plead the fifth because you just made a deal. Which again, I can't wait to see this. And so the question then becomes, how much is Trump worried about this? Because look, she was his lawyer. How much of what she did criminally would be covered under, attorney-client privilege? I mean, these are crimes, right? So I would assume there's no privilege here. But thoughts?
Yeah, crime fraud exception. That's the thing is you can... if you've committed crimes or fraud, then you have to talk about it. There is no attorney-client privilege here. I think the main thing with Sidney Powell is she's got, she was in that December 18th meeting in the Oval Office. And that whole conversation basically sparked Donald Trump's tweet like early that next morning where he said, you know, we're having this thing on January 6th. Be there. It'll be wild. So whatever happened in that late night meeting fed into that tweet, and that call to arms for Trump supporters has been one of the things that they all sort of cited in their, whenever they were arrested, is he's like, well, I was called by the president, or, he told me to be there. You know, all of these Trump allies have said basically the same thing. So, I'm wondering, there's got to be a lot of stuff that is in, yes, there's the Coffee County stuff, which is its own bag of worms. But I mean, the stuff that happened in that meeting on December 18th is going to be huge, and she's going to have to disclose it.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm wondering who's next, because as I've said from the beginning, I don't know how loyal these lawyers are going to be to Trump. You know, Trump, is a guy who, demands loyalty, but these people aren't going to go to jail for the rest of their lives because of him. And I look at the fact that I saw this other story, and maybe you caught this as well, but Peter Thiel, who was, one of his guys, mm-hmm. Evidently was an FBI informant. I guess in the summer of 2021, the mega donor turned now a confidential human source for the FBI. I just want to know, are there tapes? Was he wired?
I think that is the exact same question I had too, because I saw that and I was just like, oh crap, like what meetings did he have? Because that was also around the time that he was trying to push Masters to run for U.S. Senate. So like, what other conversations did he have around that time? And, what else was he able to deliver to the FBI? And I mean, holy cats, like that was a big one. And
I wonder how many other of the inner circle said, uh-oh, this is trouble. How many of the smart people who said, whoa, I better, take contemporaneous notes. I better record this. I better have something to cover my own behind in case he goes, down. And I think, the closer we get to trial time, I think the more of this stuff we're going to see coming out, which I got to tell you, if I'm Trump, I'm not sleeping well.
Yeah, that's the other thing that happens. There were articles today, I think Maggie Hagenberman wrote about Trump was blindsided by this. Even people in Trump's orbit didn't even know that this was going to happen. And so there's got to be some catch up on the walls tonight.
The hamburgers are flying. Because when I saw this, when I saw the Kraken go down, I'm going, who's next? Who would be the next logical... the next big name to come? And I could only go Rudy. Rudy's got no money. He won't do well in prison. And with his abuse problems, being locked up is not a good thing for him.
And it's a fair point. So Ken Cheresborough is the other guy who was supposed to go to court on, what is it, like Monday or Tuesday? They're starting jury selection for what was going to be Cheresborough and Sidney Powell's case tomorrow. And so if he's going to make a deal, he's got to do it fast, because she's basically going to say everything and he's got to come up with some kind of agreement that he can make. Honestly, you got to wonder if this guy thinks that he is so far above all of this, because he's sort of operated under this, like, I was at the DOJ, I did nothing wrong. Kind of holier than thou attitude. Yeah. And so it may very well be the case that he goes to court and sort of sinks himself.
Good.
But
I'm innocent. The prisons are full of innocent people.
I know. That's it's going to be him or Rudy. I think you're right. Him or Rudy.
I'm waiting for Rudy to flip. I'm waiting for it. Cause I think that would be the end of Trump, because I think Rudy knows where all the bodies are buried. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where it's Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to take a look at her work. So good. I'm glad that's happening. But we got to talk about the clown show today. How long has it been now? How long has this nightmare been going on of Republican speaker holidays?
It's like, is it 17 days?
Something like that.
I mean, it's too dang long.
Can we taxpayers get a reimbursement on all of the costs since they're not actually doing any work?
That is an important question I feel like we need to be asking, is I feel like every time Republicans, you know, don't do anything, or they adjourn and then or they like come into session and then adjourn like 30 minutes afterwards. I feel like we should be getting something back from that.
Yeah, what I find it really hysterical, though, is Jim Jordan started off, he had 200 votes, and then he got 199. He went backwards. And evidently today, they're saying he's probably going to lose even more, could have up to 40 people voting against him. So his charm offensive, not working.
No, not at all. There are a couple of stories that I read that that apparently they were drawing straws in the Republican caucus because they were a little bit nervous about like everybody piling on at once. So they've just been slowly piling on. And so he met today with like 22 of the holdouts, and they basically told him like, we're not going to vote for you. And he kept asking them, what do you want? And they were all like, we want you to drop out of the race. Like,
we want you to go away.
We don't want anything. We want you gone. That is what we want. And he walked out of the meeting with like, something written down, scribbled down on a piece of paper or something to the effect of, you know, what do they really need or what are they really looking for or something like that. And it's just like, no, there is no hidden thing going on here. Like, they're really being upfront about this. They want you gone.
They don't
want
like
you out. Yes. And there's nothing that's going to come of this. And so, I mean, he was talking about having a third vote this evening, which I think, you know, obviously isn't going to happen. I'm curious, like, he started the day saying that he wasn't going to have a third vote. Is he really willing to humiliate himself again? And if so, I'm all for it. I will pop the popcorn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, this is another one of those moments where you go, you know, how far down the rabbit hole are you willing to go? And look, I find it entertaining because, look, if we're burning down our government, if we're screwing everything up, it might as well be somewhat entertaining. And it has been. I got to be honest. It's been riveting.
I mean, it's kind of that philosophy. If you're not going to cry, you may as well laugh.
Exactly. You know, little gallows humor. You gotta have that. Because look, there's so many things that need to be done. And this is what I'm hoping people are paying attention to. You know, the president tomorrow is going to send a funding bill for Ukraine and Israel. To who? I don't know, because we don't have a functional House. And as you know, like everyone else does, all funding emanates out of the House. If you can't, if they're on recess, if it's another snow day tomorrow, no funding? Is that what I understand? And then what happens in a couple of days, November 17th, when we have no more money and the government runs out of money and we can't give the resources to Ukraine and Israel? What then happens?
I think the thing that I am the most concerned about is that this is what so many of the Republicans want.
Yep.
The idea of shutting down government entirely and stopping any progress at all, I feel like, is part of the agenda of people like Matt Gaetz and his seven other cohorts. And so I feel like they are winning at this, and Republicans are just sort of falling, you know, in the hole that has been dug for them by him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite remarkable. But like you said, I think the reality is this is what they want. They want dysfunction. They want, they want to be able to say, look, things are so badly broken that we have to tear it all down. We need a strong man. We need Donald Trump to come in and be the strong man dictator, authoritarian type, because he alone can fix all of this. Constitution be damned. Set that aside. We need to get our house in order. Yeah, we do, by throwing these bums out.
And that's the thing that I feel like has been part of this, whether it's the Tea Party caucus or their MAGA caucus, for a long time, where it's like, if they're trying to break it to prove that it's broken. And I mean, now we're to a point where you call it anarchy, call it nihilism, whatever you want. These people genuinely want to do as little as humanly possible to show that government isn't accomplishing anything. And I just don't understand how that message wins.
Well, look, here's the reality. And, you know, I had a conversation with a friend the other night. And she said, you know, she went back home to Iowa and she was talking to her brother, who is a right-wing lunatic. but a product of right-wing talk radio. For the last 20 years has been indoctrinated with this line of thought that government, everything government does is bad, and you know, we don't need this, and you know, what we need is we need authoritarian, we need to get things in order, put those people in their place, get people back to work, and stop living off handoffs. I mean, all of the right-wing talking points, the guy sounds like, you know, just a, one of those, you know, remember when you were a kid, they had one of those things, you could pull a string and the doll would just spew out stuff? That's basically what we have on the American right, are people who just spew out talking points. And they don't have any of the other stuff. This is where I think we are, and I think we're in the spot we're in.
Yeah, that's absolutely what you're dealing with, is they have no policy, they have no plans. They have nothing to run on other than, you know, we're better than those guys. And now I feel like they're taking that away from whatever arguments they had. You know, they could come to voters and be like, you know, well, say what you want about us, but Democrats are, you know.
You mean the Democrats?
Right.
I mean, because that's Democrats all they've got somehow, is that kind of demonization. You know, and I hear this a lot from my red hat friends. The Democrats are evil. They hate America. And go, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Remember all the conspiracies about Hillary Clinton drinking the blood of the young? And I mean, good God, people.
You mean they don't?
Right? I know. It's so shocking. And so now, like, they're taking away whatever talking points they had left, where it's like, so
finally, I got
that whole election thing.
Yeah, I got to get your thoughts on the dust up between Senator John Fetterman and Bob Menendez. Evidently, some harsh words thrown at each other. Because look, I think Fetterman's right. Menendez got to go. Sorry, you don't get to be a foreign agent. You don't get to help a foreign country when you're on the committee. I'm sorry, you just don't get to do that.
Yeah, and it's hard because you want to believe that someone is innocent until proven guilty, but at the same time, it's like, we're not going to give you the things to sell to people. And I think it's completely rational. It's completely reasonable for Fetterman to be like, hello, this is a bad idea. And I, what I've been surprised by is how many Democrats are willing to come forward and say, you know, you got to go. Republicans, if you notice, there hasn't been a word from any Republicans in the Senate.
No, in fact,
and
what's interesting is, you know, again, you go to the House where you've got George Santos, who weren't the Republicans supposed to throw him out last week? Wasn't there supposed to be some kind of something?
Yeah, it's just, these are the things that are never going to happen because the vote is so close in the House. They actually need George Santos, of all people. So, you know.
Think about that. Our democracy lies in the hands of George freaking Santos.
I know. And I would say the future of the Republican Party, too.
Well, they're screwed.
Yeah, right?
I mean, the sad reality is while they're screwed, and this is what bothers me, while they're screwed, we're all screwed. Because in this country, we do need two functional parties to work together to get some stuff done. And sadly, nothing's going to get done. Especially the things we need. And like I said, tomorrow the president's going to ask for money for Ukraine and Israel, and I'm still not sure who he's asking.
Well, I know for certain he's been working with the Senate, and McConnell has signed off on everything that they've agreed to.
Doesn't matter. The Senate can pass it. The Senate can do the House's homework. They can write the bills. But ultimately, it's got to start in the House.
And I don't know how they're going to figure this out, because it's what's been amazing to me is that Republicans have spent the last 17 days saying that Democrats should have saved McCarthy somehow. and yet they then turn around and say that whatever happens, they will not have any kind of coalition government.
Yeah.
It's like, so make up your mind. Like, which one is it? Do you want Democrats to save you or not? Because, you know, it seems like you're kind of two minds here.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, the reality is they think it's, you know, 2000. They think it's, you know, 2001. I mean, Dick Cheney said Democrats will cave. It's what they do. They've gotten used to Democrats saving democracy. They've gotten used to Democrats coming in and putting out fires. They've gotten used to Democrats saying, okay, we'll take the back seat so that, you know, people aren't harmed. And finally, you've got a Democratic Party saying, no, go ahead, you know, knock yourself out. You know, show us who you are.
And remember what happened at the last shutdown with Donald Trump, the longest shutdown in history.
Yeah.
Democrats held in that case. It was Trump and the Republicans that backed down. And I think they have now basically discovered their power, hopefully. And they're going to stick to it, which I say, you know, let the Republicans eat their own.
There you go. Sarah, as always, incredible stuff. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good day tomorrow.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2013. That was the day that two workers on California's Bay Area Rapid Transit, or BART as it is more commonly called, were struck and killed by a train. Christopher Shepard was a BART track engineer. Lawrence Daniels was a contract employee. Both men had years of experience working on the tracks. They were inspecting the tracks when they were hit and killed. Workers who usually operated the trains were out on strike. The Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 1555, and SEIU Local 1021 had walked off the job the day before. The strike disrupted the daily commute of 400,000 Bay Area travelers. The unions were on strike for improved wages and safer working conditions. The union wanted bulletproof glass for station agent booths for worker safety. They also asked for improved lighting in the tunnels. According to an article in Mother Jones, quote, a BART spokesman called the safety issues a smokescreen, arguing that contract negotiations were not the place to raise them. In response to the strike, BART was training a replacement worker to run the train when the tragedy occurred. The manager, who was supposed to monitor the unexperienced driver, had left the car. In addition, the National Transportation Safety Board found that BART had no way for workers on the tracks to communicate with the drivers. The family of Lawrence Daniels sued BART, which settled for $300,000. The union and BART settled the strike 2 days after the tragic deaths. The union won nearly a 16% pay raise. The union also won safety upgrades. But management won concessions on employee contributions to medical benefits and pensions.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Really is quite amazing where we are. And look, you know, it's easy to make light of the fact that there's such chaos in the House. Because, again, I think as Sarah pointed out, What else can you do in this moment but find humor in disaster? Like I said, gallows humor. But the reality is, you know, this is sadly serious, and the rest of the world is watching. And if you watch the president.